Welcome everyone to Know Thy Brand podcast, the branding podcast for women in business. Welcome everybody to Know Thy Brand podcast, a podcast that tackles gender inequality through the brand lens. From brand strategies to marketing tactics, from female leadership to female entrepreneurship, from corporate brand to personal brand, every episode is designed to inspire you and to support you in a journey for success, whatever success means to you. Hello, everyone. Today we have with us Kate Weber. Kate is the fantastic woman that founded Women in Asset Servicing Network. Not just a network that on Monday, as the time of recording, so a few days ago, received the 2021 Asset Servicing Times Industry Excellence Awards for Equity, Diversity and Inclusion Initiative. Well, congratulations, Kate. Thank you so much for coming and join us.
Thank you. It was really exciting to get the award. It's really lovely that the network is being recognized in this way, and I'm hoping it will just make us bigger and bigger.
I would like for you to tell us a bit of your background, professionally, and how and why you started this network.
Okay, so I've been in the asset servicing industry for about 30 years. I didn't really decide to go into asset servicing. I kind of more fell into it. I got very lost at school and I kind of had lots of jobs, and I had a job as an administration assistant at Fidelity when I was quite young. And it made me realise a couple of things. First of all, that financial services was not this fuddy-duddy old thing that wasn't particularly interesting. In actual fact, it was actually pretty cool. And then secondly, that I had to go to university and get a degree if I was ever going to do anything with my life. So both of those things happened. And after university, I ended up back at Fidelity for a period of time. And I just really enjoyed the mix of work and the kind of the things from the creativity aspects to the relationship aspects to, you know, the maths and the IT. They kind of all started to coalesce all those decades ago when I started. And I found it a really interesting set of activities. And so I just kept changing jobs within Fidelity and eventually ended up at PwC. Consulting, which made me understand the breadth and depth, particularly of the European industry. And so I kind of just stayed and evolved, and it was very kind to me, and it always has been. And over the last probably 15 years, I've been working in product, which I particularly like, because product is a real doing role. You know, you're generating, you're creating stuff. You're making stuff happen. It's aligned to revenue. It's aligned to helping organizations change and flourish. And you have these moments of excitement where you're figuring out something new, all the way through to sitting down and trying to explain something complicated in a way that somebody can repeat it back to their client. And I find that variety really interesting.
Yeah, I will never, ever have associated your line of work with creativity, but... Normally people think, you know, asset servicing more of maybe a relationship. Yes, I could see that, but not definitely creativity. But you're right, you know, there is a lot of that, and the variety, it's so important as well. I could never do the same job day in, day out, but other people do. But
yeah, not me. Some people enjoy that, but I like the variety as well. So I currently work at Northern Trust, and I'm the lead product manager for Global Fund Services. And I particularly enjoy that because the culture of the firm suits me and what I'm about. But it also gives me a chance to do the work that I really enjoy. So it works really well on a number of levels.
But so this is your, day job, if you want, yes. Or officially recognized. I don't know. Anyway, that's a part of your life, working life. Another important, very important part of your working life is the Women Asset Servicing Network, which is something you created.
Yes.
And
I got back into creative, but I really got a lot of support. But it came out of an idea that as I went through those decades, there was an awful lot of women around me when I first started at the administration levels of asset servicing. But as you went up the ladder, those women just disappear. And they disappear at almost every level. So you go from an admin to a team leader, to a team leader, to a junior manager, to a junior manager, and so on and so forth. And at every level, the percentages of women drop like a stone.
Yes.
And so I started to think about, why does that happen? And it can't just be because the women have children, or some women don't have children, but they still don't go up the ladder. So what is it which is stopping us? And I did a bit of research, and the research that really hit home for me, and actually hit home for me on a personal level, was something which talked about three elements. And they were, women often aren't brave enough in their career. Obviously, these are sweeping generalizations, but generalizations have a lot of basis in truth. Women often hide behind a comfort blanket. They're great doers, but they don't put their head above the parapet and say, you know, I'll speak in this team meeting. I'll speak at this event. I'll go on this panel. And that holds them back. And then secondly, women are really poor at self-assessment of their skills. I don't know how many interviews I've had with young men who come in and they can't even do the top five things on the job description. And then you counter that where you have to push women to apply for jobs. And they say, well, I can't do number nine. But number nine's not relevant in comparison with the fact that you can do the top eight things really, really well. And then the final piece is networking. And women are getting better at networking, but there's not enough opportunities. And so those three things combined, I think, are as important as flexible working and the ability for cultures and unconscious bias. It's women having to make some of their own choices, which either leads them to be stellar or get stuck in what might be described as that mushy middle.
Wow, there is so much to unpeel. That I think we need possibly three different podcasts on this. I wanted to just to chip in on a couple of things. You're absolutely right. There are generalizations, but it's also something that we see. I personally think, and it's not just me actually, also research says that some of the reason why we don't put our hands up, or why we, you know, we don't go for a job if we don't think it is 100%, you know, we are prepared 100%, comes down to social expectations. So it's not just us, it's not that all women are born with this within themselves. I think that there is a lot from when you're young, you know, your brothers can be boisterous and make noise. You're supposed to be more quieter and, you know, help mama in the kitchen while everybody's outside playing. These are stereotypes, but when I was young, that was very much the truth. But it is a problem. It is definitely a problem. And I think there are ways that women can be encouraged to change, to become the change for themselves. There are things that I think is a responsibility of the organization to recognize and address. Because remember when we were talking at the first time we met, I was telling you how when I was in hiring people for a specific job, I was given the people had to do a self-assessment before HR would pass to me for assessment on technical skills. And luckily, I knew immediately there was something wrong when I started receiving only male CVs. And it was because the women were rating themselves much lower. And so yes. It's very, and it was not absolutely the case. Luckily, I asked, I said, just for equity, can you have some women on, you know, interviewed? And turned up with exactly what you were saying, that the man had more confidence and would say, yes, I can do it. And then you start drilling a little bit, but you don't even know what we're talking about. How can you do it? Google it. I'm like, yes, you're supposed to teach it, so kind of you shouldn't know. But and then the women were like, yeah, but this is such a complicated topic. Yes, I know it, but I mean, it's really complicated. And you're like, yeah, but if you recognize it's very complicated, maybe you can study and get better, and then you can teach it. You know, it's like, it's completely different. But what I like also what you said about the networking, I love, because I think that, especially in your industry, is difficult for women. There are so few women. And so for women to find each other, so, okay, I can work on my confidence and try to put my hands up a bit more. I can work on my confidence and try to accept the fact that I'm not 100% qualified, but that doesn't mean that I'm absolutely disqualified. There is a difference between
absolutely.
But then I finally get there and I sit at the table and around me, there are only men. So what
that's happened. That's happened to me, and it's demoralizing. It's every day you go in and you're the only person around the table. And after a while, you look around and you go, I don't see anybody who looks like me. And that feels, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't. And so if you counter something, so if somebody says something and you counter it, you look around and you think, there's nobody here who's going to understand the world from my perspective. And so that your voice gets lost, because very quickly then it gets overrun by somebody else who goes back to the original point. And so diversity can actually really, a lack of diversity just encourages this group thinking, boards and high meetings. And so it's so essential that we get our voices out.
Absolutely. And like, there is so much research on the impact of diversity, diverse thinking, how if you all sit at the table and we all look the same and we all think the same, well, we're not going to change much, right? We're not going to achieve much. But the problem is, because we find, as women, like you, I found myself in meetings where I'm the only woman. Marketing is tend to have more women than the such servicing industry. So it's not, but as I progressed, exactly what you said, as I progressed in my career ladder, because before I was in the corporate world, like everyone else, before I started my journey as an entrepreneur, I saw less and less women around me, and I found me. And frustratingly, the one or two other women that were there, I had it so hard. And I think they really hardened them as individuals. They even less understanding of the needs of maybe a young woman growing in her career than a man, because they had to fight so hard to be where they were that they didn't have time to support, a junior coming in. I think things are changing, but that sense of loneliness and that sense of impotence then kind of make you want to stop. If every time you raise a hand, people are like, yeah, but you don't know. What do you know?
Yes, you have a new voice.
Exactly. So that's why I think the networking, so the way you took the three problems and you said, okay, I cannot fix the first two, but I'm going to focus on the one that I can do something about, I think is brilliant. And tell us a little. Sorry.
I think we can also fix the first two as well. And the reason I think we can fix the first two is we tell stories.
Yes.
And so all the events are around stories, and all the events are examples of where women have done something brave. So I remember about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, ahead of a funds forum, we had a bunch of young women who came in and did presentations, 2 minute slot presentations on anything they wanted. They did it from wearing high heels to male suicide. It's a real gamut of presentations to quite a large audience. And it was about being brave, just taking those first few steps. And a couple of them have said that little step that they took in front of that wide audience enabled them to think, oh, I can put my hand up now. So we can make a difference. And it's you don't have to change the world in a heartbeat, but what you can do is change every individual to feel that they can make that little step, that little next step. Not everybody can be CEO, but if you can be, if you're currently an admin assistant and we can help you become a team leader, then you're on your way. You will then follow the path from that point onwards.
That's very true. You're absolutely right. What my thought was, like, you tackle it very, I think, pragmatically and started from the networking, but absolutely, yeah. I agree with you. And as what we talk in with my company is supporting, changing the world one woman at a time. So we just focus on if you can help one person, is already, you're already in the path to change the world, because the ripple effect is going to be felt. But so you started a networking. How easy was to find people that supported you within your organization? Because obviously that might have been seen like taking time away from your work, although I imagine there's been a lot of working evenings and stuff. But, you know, and how both male and female colleagues have accepted or have responded to your network?
Okay, so first of all, I have a very full day job, so I can't do it during the day. Or if I do something for women and asset servicing during the day, then I always end up catching up with myself later.
Okay.
So it is a slug of time. It's almost like volunteering. You just have to give your time. And what I'm really heartened with is there now people coming forward saying, can I do that bit for you? Can I run the website?
Wow.
Can I do XYZ? Can I run an event? So a lady called Gillian Hepburn, for example, at Schroeder, she comes along and says, can I do an event on ESG? And you're like, absolutely. There has been a whole variety of different reactions. So there's a lot of women, older women, who tend to want to really get engaged and involved. They've been through the same experience. Some younger women find it more difficult to engage, which is a bit of a shame. And I think that's because they're starting out in their career and they don't want to rock the boat. Potentially they're getting more and more comfortable bit by bit by bit. And the more events they come to, the more things that they can engage with. So it comes. A lot of men have been really heartening, actually. And I've found a lot of men who have daughters, particularly teenage daughters, really actively want to get involved with the network, possibly because they don't want what they've seen for the last 20, 30 years to happen to their kids. They want their kids to come in and be part of the next generation and the next evolvement of women in business. So people like Paul Chapman and John Willis and Steve Leggett, all of these men have got actively involved and wanted to come to the events or wanted to give us support. So it's kind of generational, and I'm sort of beginning to see more and more younger women and men want to get involved with it. It's not a topic that worries them anymore. It's beginning to feel like a topic that everybody wants to be part of. So it's changing.
Yeah, it's very interesting what you say, because first of all, I'm so happy to hear the men and being supportive. I mean, I had the chance to meet Paul. He's there, and he's there with like genuinely there to make a difference. And it's so important, because when we talk about diversity and gender equality, then often we end up being women talking about that. And we're not very diverse, are we? It's only us talking about. The first thing that Paul said when he saw it on my website is like, I only see 5 women in your board of directors. And he is right. He doesn't know is that my board of advisors on the other end has men in it. And because it precisely for that, but the people actually put their hands up to be directors happen to be 5 women. That doesn't mean that is not changing. But he was the first one that said, I went on your website and I see only 5 women. How are you going to be diverse? And he's right. So it's very important that's why I wanted to know more about the role of men, because we can tell us about, you know, amongst us, all the problems we have, we can tell us wherever we want, but we need to get also different ideas and different point of view on our own problems. You know, to me, when I was set up the company, I had a lot of male mentors that I went to and say, look, this is what I want to do. This is why I want to do it. What do you think? And as you said, particularly men with teenager girls are the one that say, yeah, go for it. But have you considered this? Or and you should also consider this, which is brilliant, because between us, we hadn't thought about it. So absolutely, I think the female-male collaboration is critical for gender equality and to support women.
I couldn't agree more, because otherwise we get our own groupthink going, right?
So yeah.
Us women all huddling around just telling each other stories can turn into therapy if we're not careful, and actually nothing happens.
Absolutely.
So we absolutely need them, and we want them to publicise the benefits of diversity and what they themselves get out of working in diverse teams.
Exactly. Absolutely. I've seen it even with my own husband since I started this journey. He's very supportive and he's trying to, you know, guide me when he can, when he own things that are his, you know, domain, like sales. I have no idea what sales. You know, he helps me. And I saw the exactly if his eyes are open for the first time, really realizing what diversity can do and why it's important to get diverse people within his own team to start with.
I do worry sometimes that we're quite obsessed with numbers. We're quite obsessed with physicality of diversity. So we're worried about women. We're worried about people of color. We're worried about disability. Something physical. What we forget is that you can have two men who look exactly the same, but in their brains there are fundamentally different things happening. And that's even more empowering than physical differences.
Absolutely. And also we should be more open to discussion. I find that oftentimes in meetings, people tend, even if they're true men or true women, they think diametrically opposed, you know, in the opposite direction, then to avoid conflict, I was actually listening to a podcast recently and they say, for instance, if the manager speaks first, if the senior person speaks first, everybody in the room will tend to agree with the person. So in a meeting, you should always get the junior person, people to speak first, because they have their own idea. That will never share the moment that the boss has spoken. Middle management agrees because they're not going to go against the boss. And they, especially young people, I love working with young people. As you know, I teach at university and I really love it because they have so many bright, different ways of looking at the world compared to us. But they don't get to speak because then they are afraid. What you said before, they don't want to rock the boat. Why would you, your junior just arrive, the boss has spoken, your bosses have agreed. Are you going to be the one that put their hands up and say, I disagree? No.
Exactly.
So, I mean, diversity is diversity in every sense. It should be in every sense. But women have it a bit harder than men. Like this is it's a fact. I mean,
it is a fact. And it is changing and it has changed. I had the pleasure and probably the problem of being brought up in an old people's home. My mum and dad, when I was a teenager, owned an old people's home. So I knew women who had first got the vote in the UK in 1918, whenever. And they were women who hadn't married, or they were women whose husbands had died in World War I, World War II. They were women in the 1930s when they married, even if they earned more than their husbands, had to give up work. And I always thought when I was a teenager that those women, those first women who had campaigned for the vote, they would be fairly militant. And they weren't, they were pretty differential to all men, whether they were the husbands, brothers, or even just men. And what I was angry about when I was a teenager is half the time those silly old men were wrong, but all the women would just defer to them. They would just take what those men said as gospel. And that's fundamentally changed over my working lifetime. And now the teenagers of this world, the female teenagers, are quite assertive about what they think. So that's a big change, but it takes a really long time.
It takes a long time. And I definitely saw the changes from when I started to now. I mean, the things that we were supposed to accept in the workplace just because we are women. And nowadays, I don't think any of my students will ever sit down and say, okay, that's fine. There might be, but the vast majority, I know the girls that are at work for me, they will be like, yeah, no, that's not, sorry, they study with me. Like, no, that's not gonna happen. Thank you very much. And they can change the world. There is a little bit of a risk though. And there was an interesting post on LinkedIn last year, this young woman that has been promoted or something. She was having a fantastic career. And she said, I don't want to be defined as a female leader. I'm just a leader. Why are you pushing me? You're putting me in the corner. And And there was an interesting debate because there were people say, well, they say that because they want to recognize that you have it harder than other people. And others were saying, well, is she just a leader? That's what she should be. And she was a bit pushing back saying, I don't need anybody to help me because I am, doesn't matter if I'm female or male. I think that that's great that she experienced that she never had the question to look at the world differently. But I also remember that when I was young, I felt the same. I was like, I'm on top of the world. I can do everything. Then I had the children. I'm like, oh, whoopsie. Not quite. So there is a bit.
Yeah. You do want to be recognized for the work that you have done. Women do have it harder. And there's a lot of things that are unspoken these days. So in the past, there were laws that stopped us doing things. There was a whole ridge of society where the glass ceiling was very prominent. Now the glass ceiling is much more subtle, and things like unconscious bias do exist in people's brains. And it's only as you get older, you start to recognize some of your own unconscious biases, that you recognize that whole organizations can have those unconscious biases. And even when they're trying to overcome them, it takes time. So yes, some women are incredible and they can punch through whatever glass ceilings that may or may not exist anymore. But there are an awful lot of women who get stuck behind individuals or people or words, micro aggressions that might have, you know, all collected up to stop them from achieving their goals.
Now, when you mentioned the fact that there are women that, you know, they can do anything and they're going to break. You know what I'm going to ask you in a second, right? Because it's something you mentioned once we were talking and you said there is a difference between role model and supermodel. Because when, for me, I recognize the importance of role models to look at people. And that's why also, you know, the brand was born, you know, to create a community where people can look at each other and say, well, we face the same challenges or similar. But we together we can, you know, support each other and get over our obstacles. That's great. And so you are not, you know, alone in the room and feeling alone. But then there is the supermodel, and that is a problem a bit, or a challenge.
No, I think it is a real big challenge. So what we do in society and what we do, particularly as women, is we hold people up and say, I want to be like that person. So an example would be, a very clear example, is when you see a woman 5'10" and skinny as a rake walking down a catwalk looking incredible. I'm only 5'4" and I'm not as skinny as a rake. So those clothes would not look like that on me. And when you're younger, you try whatever you can to change your whole body shape and it's never going to happen. And then when you get older, you realize that you are what you are. And it's okay to be, you are what you are. But what happens in business is exactly the same. People look at incredibly successful women and say, that's beyond my capability to achieve. And therefore those women who are incredibly successful, there are elements of them which, you know, they're at the top of their game. They are right at the top of where we want to achieve. And they are really important that they're there. But there's also the importance that we identify role models throughout management, from the top right the way down to the bottom. Because role models aren't one person. Role models are usually a whole bunch of different people that, you know, I really like the way my manager does X, Y, Z, and I want to emulate that. But I also don't like the way they do ABC, and I don't want to emulate that. And so what you do over a career and over probably everything that you do in life is you take bits of people and then you try to use that bit that you, and copy it and make it your own. And that is probably the difference between role models and supermodels.
I agree.
Role models can be anywhere. Supermodels are right at the top of their game. They're incredible, but they're often unattainable.
And discouraging, because you look at them and you're like, yeah, but I will never be that person. So why even try? I will never get there. And I think that having more manageable objectives, and then you might end up there, but trying to avoid, I think, looking too far ahead and then being afraid of making even the smallest step, because you're going to say, well, I will never get that. Why even bother?
By looking that far ahead and thinking I'll never get there, all that will happen is that you never try, because it's too much to do. But if you can take it in small steps, okay, I keep putting out, you know, you're an administration assistant, you want to get to a team leader, or you want to get to the next level, just concentrate on the pieces that you got. What are the things that you have to do to become a team leader? What are the attributes of your team leader? And then you keep propelling yourself upwards. The best leaders I've ever met are those who are constantly learning and who are curious about themselves and wanting to make themselves better. And also they're curious about, okay, well, I really liked the way that that person presented that particular thing, and I want to ask them how they did it. Those people are really to be admired.
Yeah, exactly. I think that you touched on something very important, the curiosity, the willing to push yourself a bit forward, because you want to see what else is there that you still don't possess and you can achieve. Look, I'm conscious of time, and thank you so much for taking time for us. I just wanted to ask you the last question. This is because it's, Know Their Brand is about branding. And branding is a lot about emotion and connections. And it's something that applies to companies, but applies to individuals as well. So we do work on branding also for women, just to help them really to find that strength to put their hand up when it's the time to put the hand up. But specifically talking about corporation, I would like to ask if there is one brand in particular that you love and why.
Yeah, so I like the brand, but I'm not so bothered about the products. And it's Lego. And the reason that I like it is because it's persistent. So I remember Lego as a child. And now Lego is everywhere. My daughter was very into Lego. My husband likes Lego. And so I have a lot of Lego in the house. And actually, it's quite annoying stuff. It's everywhere. But importantly, what I like about it is Lego is a brand that's been resilient. It has adapted and changed the way that it presents itself to the market and what it delivers over an elongated period of time. And I kind of like that, because not everybody is the same throughout their life. And so what I like about that Lego brand is how it's evolved and adapted and refound itself very successfully over this extended period. And I think that's kind of cool. I like that.
And I don't know if you read about it. I personally love Lego on a personal level. In our house is full of Lego everywhere. And also because from a branding perspective, it's a very interesting story. So I've tried to follow quite a bit what they do. They are also very very conscious of what they do. Like they pay attention to what they do. They've done some incredible work. If you look like on Instagram on Know Their Brand, you will see that Lego is mentioned more than once, because they've done, they're really trying to have a positive impact. They were the first one to pull out advertising from magazines that were inciting violence and hate. In the UK, yes. And most recently, they've done something that makes me so happy, because it frustrates the hell out of me until now. For years, they made a girl and boy, two different. They had the girls, Lego friends, and the boys, which was like cars and Star Wars, and as if, girls didn't like Star Wars or like my biggest problem as the mom of boys was that the Lego friends had cute cars, they had animals and all these things that my kids love. But then you don't gonna buy a pink box. Well, my kids really don't care about the pink, thankfully. They're a bit more gender neutral, but you can't buy a box like this. Nobody will buy them as a present, even if they know that they like it, because they don't want to be the one that bring the pink box to the party, right? And really annoyed me, and I never understood why we had to have a female and a male Lego when it's just about building blocks and having fun with them. Yeah. And they recently announced that they've scrapped the gender diverse lines, and they're gonna just make lines like anything.
Which I think is really good. What I'd like to see them do next then is figure out how they're going to make Lego out of something other than plastic.
I see.
which will be interesting. How do they, you know, it would be really nice to see a brand like Lego, and I'm sure they'll do it because they constantly reevaluate themselves. Are they going to, for example, identify how they can make all this stuff out of old plastic bags, or how do they create Lego into being almost like a zero consumer of new stuff and just sort of hoover up all the old? That would be pretty amazing.
I think they're working on it from my branding, you know, looking inside the company. But definitely, as you say, they constantly reevaluate themselves. And I think it takes courage to make a statement, a press release where you say, look, we got it wrong. We did the two gender thing and now we're going to change it. I mean, takes courage. That's honest. And that's the one thing I wanted to say. I think companies, they need to become more transparent and authentic. Stop hiding behind, you know, your big walls, because the walls, nobody's in that anymore. Everybody's at home working from Zoom. So you need to
I stop hiding behind thousands of pages of terms and conditions. Because at the end of the day, nobody reads them and they're not really that relevant anymore.
Exactly. Just be more human as a company.
More authentic. Yeah. Exactly. Really nice to speak to you, Julia.
Very, very nice. Thank you so much for your time. And I look forward to collaborating in future with you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And stop.